Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Our 60th anniversary conference is coming up in July. Going to be July 17th, I think it starts. I should write that down. But I believe it's July 17th at the SeaTac Hilton in Seattle. And if you want to connect to other writers, connect with agents, real live agents and New York editors, or simply learn how to better connect with your readers if you're an indie published author, you should check it out. It's a great conference. You can find out more at pnwa.org. For me, the only thing I need to report, for those of you who are in the Western Washington area, I will be this Friday, April 10th, April 11th, Saturday, April 11th, I will be at Books for All Seasons in the charming Leavenworth, Washington, teaching a author's masterclass, 3-hour author masterclass, and I believe it is virtually free, very low cost, and I believe there might still be some spots open. So if you're in that area, or if you don't mind making a little drive, check it out, Books for All Seasons. You can go on my website or their website and learn all about that. Okay. So there's been some stories written recently and some, I think, a vlog posted by some MFA teachers who complain about the quality of writing sometimes that feels more like therapy than fiction or true memoir. And I understand this complaint. Reading something that feels like therapy as a reader is not a satisfying experience, I have to admit. However, it has been my experience as a writer that the best writing I do is always therapeutic in nature. I think it's unavoidable, which is why I'm so glad to have Gail Elizabeth Kretschmer as my guest today. Gail is a member of the National Association of for Poetry Therapy, and also a member of the Association of Writers and Writing Programs. And Gail holds an MFA degree in writing and has published short work in several publications, including the New York Times. And she does some great work with writing as therapy. And, well, I can't wait to find out how this goes. So let's just talk to her. Gail, how are you doing?
I'm great, Bill. How are you today?
I am fabulous. I get to talk to you about writing and how it helps us. Before we get to that, though, tell me, Gail, what is your relationship to writing? When did it start? When did you get bit by this bug?
Well, Bill, I, like many people, did some dabbling in writing stories when I was quite young, stories about dogs that ate slippers and things like that, which was probably
sure.
Really memoir. I think that I really started to get bitten by the bug in my early 20s when I was actually working as a CPA using the left side of my brain. And stories and scenes kept popping into my head, and wasn't till another 10 years went by where I was able to find the time in my life to really sit down and start working through it all. And that's I was bitten then and haven't been able to get unbitten ever since.
Toiling in the number factory of the
Bean
life
counting,
of the CPA.
Yes.
You were lining up your left and right columns, and as you were doing that, would the scenes pop into your head while you were actually working, or just when you were idle at night, or just at all times?
Well, two things. One is they tend to pop into my head when they probably shouldn't, from a safety perspective, oftentimes while driving, and that's still the case
to this
day. So if you see me on the road, be careful. But I was an auditor, and I worked with clients. I wasn't sitting at a desk all day crunching numbers. I was out and about with clients. And I met some really interesting characters in real life throughout that. I worked in a small business department of a major accounting firm, and so I met a lot of quirky entrepreneurs and other characters. And so, yeah, those scenes would pop into my head right in the middle of a board meeting.
Oh, interesting. See how the subconscious works? It just niggles away at you. You know, I have a theory about the scenes that come to us while driving, which I think is similar to scenes that come to us like when we're in the shower, or scenes that come to us when we're like doing dishes, or is that you go into this sort of trance-like state in your drive because you kind of stop thinking so much and you kind of get relaxed, and that's when the subconscious can speak to you, when you're not busy chat. You know what I mean?
I think that's absolutely right. But you bring up another interesting point. There have been studies that show that our creative juices are triggered when we exercise particularly in a way where we're doing some sort of crossover, a right-left motion, for example. So even washing dishes can be something that triggers your creative process, which I don't think driving necessarily does, but I think you're right about driving, that it does give you a chance to let your mind relax and wander and become playful.
You know what else is, I think, key for creativity, since we're talking about the therapeutic nature of creativity and of writing, is that when we're driving, sometimes we have no pressure on ourselves. And I think that the creative mind often functions best when we aren't trying to squeeze something out of it, when we're just letting ourselves drift, and it's in that very relaxed state that the imagination really flourishes. I think sometimes writers struggle because when they get themselves down to the desk, it's like, okay, now I got to do it. You know, this is it. The race is going to be run, kind of thing. But in those other states, there's no pressure on us.
I agree with you. And I think that's when you get the writing from the heart, when you can just let go. And there's this common thinking in the world of writers where we need to put our butt in the chair and we need to write for X number of hours per day.
Right.
And I know that works for a lot of people. That doesn't work for me because, I mean, I have to put my butt in the chair, although I will say I do most of my best processing when I'm walking the dog or doing something
right.
else, and then I have to get down and get home and write it down before I forget. But the
right.
idea of having to write for a certain amount of time, to me, is so restrictive that my rebellious brain takes over, or even my frightened, anxious brain takes over and says, oh, my gosh, time's running out. I haven't produced anything good. And it just isn't – it's, to me, counterproductive to actually just letting it flow and having fun and doing your personal discovery, which is where, as you say, the great writing comes from.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that if you're going to have, like, word counts and a certain number of hours you're going to do, you have to do it in without pressure. For whatever reason, you have to play a trick with yourself that this isn't a pressure thing. This isn't that you aren't a failure if you come up a few words or a few minutes short. And I think that you're not alone in that the creative mind I don't think most people's creative minds function well in that restrictive, demanding environment. It wants to be free. It wants to be happy. It wants to be effortless. At least mine does.
I agree. And it also, I think, needs to process without judgment. And that's one of the key things that I bring into workshops when I'm working with people for writing for therapeutic reasons, is that there is no judgment. We're used to going to English class and the teacher says it has to be 150 words and you have to get your sentences and paragraphs correct and start with the thesis statement and all that. And that's all just baloney. You know, it's really, there is no judgment.
Right.
There is no right or wrong. It's just you have to trust the process and let it go.
Well, that's great. So that leads us to the work you've been doing as sort of writing as therapy. And so was this something you learned from that you had maybe done for yourself or you had seen done, or was this an idea you had? How did this begin for you?
Well, when I was getting my MFA in fiction, I met the fabulous poet Ellen Bass, and she has done a lot of work with adult survivors of child sexual abuse in the therapeutic writing venue. And I was fascinated by her talking about this, and I just kind of said, I can do this. I want to do this. And I think it rang quite true to me because I knew how cathartic writing can be just from my own personal experience. So I immediately put out some feelers in the community I was in and started working first with the domestic violence shelter for domestic violence survivors, and then later with the cancer care center in the community and working with cancer survivors. And I just got I just fell in love with the work.
All right. So why did you fall in love with it? A lot of sound like a very challenging experience. You're dealing with people in high stress and in a lot of pain. And so what did you fall in love with? What was so lovely about it?
I think the first and foremost that what I saw immediately was the transformative power of the process. And I hadn't even done a lot of studying of the of therapeutic writing when I first started out, some, because I didn't want to go in not knowing anything, but I hadn't done as much studying as I have since. But I just saw how women, for example, who had been abused, really were able to lighten up and to express things about themselves that they had always been told that were of little value, and they suddenly found value in themselves. They found hope. And so it's just amazing, the transformative power, even in one workshop where a group of strangers walk into a room and they've never met each other, and 90 minutes later, they are crying and hugging and laughing and just coming together. It's just, I've never seen anything like that as I do with the therapeutic writing workshops. So partly it's seeing the individual transformation, and partly it's seeing the way a community can support one another so incredibly.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me because, you know, I think all of our pain, in my experience, is the result of a story I'm telling about the past or myself in the present. A story. So, you know, because this happened, I'm no good. Because this happened, I can't. Because of this, I won't. And it's all just a story. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I deserved that abuse. Whatever the, but that is just a story. It feels like reality, but it's a story. And when you change that story, you change your life. When you change your story, you change your life. It's been the case for me numerous times. I don't know about you, but it's certainly been my personal experience that when I change that story, many other things change as well.
Well, it's true, and there have been a number of studies that have done that talk about the more we tell our story, the more our memory changes to match that story, and it may actually become farther and farther from factually what happened. But in the retelling, we're reliving it and re-experiencing it. And so when you're writing, what you want to do is retell it in a way that's more, I hate to keep using the word therapeutic, but more beneficial, and actually trying to find a way to tweak your perspective, even just a tiny bit, that allows you to become unstuck from that place of saying, I'm no good, I'm not worthy, or wherever it is that you're stuck. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, telling the story is so important there. But on the other hand, so many people don't even tell their stories. You're a writer. You do tell your story. You put it on paper. So many people don't. And Maya Angelou said the greatest pain is bearing an untold story inside you. And so I agree with that. And so letting people get their stories out is so important.
So the power of simply telling the story, putting it in a place where other people can see it and other people share it.
Right. Right.
It's therapeutic also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so has writing been therapeutic for you over your life?
It has. It has, absolutely. I don't journal. I will be, tell you that.
Really?
And I try to journal, but I have a hard time doing it without judgment, and so I don't journal regularly. So a lot of the therapeutic value I get comes in writing fiction or writing essays. And so that allows, because what that allows me to do is to tell the story and let it reflect back to me. And that's one reason I think writing sometimes can be even more valuable than like talk therapy. And I've had people in my workshop say that a short writing workshop has done more for them than 6 months of therapy, because it's reflective. You put the word out and it's staring you back at you from the page, and it forces you to rethink and reconsider what it is that you've just said.
Well, so, it's one thing to, yeah, because it seems to me it's one thing to think the word, to think the feeling, the thought, I'm no good. But when you write it down, it's easier to question that thought. It can almost look absurd sometimes. I stink. I'm no good. I'll never be. And in your head, it can feel like the truth as you whisper it to yourself. But then you write it down, it's so much easier to begin questioning it. That's certainly been the case for me.
Absolutely. And to answer your question, a few years back, I knew going into the year that it was going to be a strange year for me. I didn't know how exactly, but it started out with me going on a heavy metal cruise with my 19-year-old son. And so I thought, okay, if this is the way the year's starting out, it's going to be a wacko year. And so every month I wrote a chapter of a one-year memoir, and I shared it with my writing group. And I didn't do it for therapy, but it was amazing. It was amazing what I learned by what you say, by putting the words down and saying, really? Is this really what happened? Is this really what I was thinking? And forcing me to reconsider it. And then letting my writing group come back at me and say, and question me on things, so that I had to rethink not just how I wrote it, but what I really felt.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about memoir is, because I teach memoir a lot now, I quite enjoy it, and I always feel like teaching memoir is always includes a certain amount of therapy, because in part, one of the job of the memoirist is to help the reader understand why the narrator, you, the memoirist, felt the way she felt, did what she did, because everything you did is true. But the question is, can the reader understand why you did the things you did, and why you believed what you did, and why you said what you said? Because oftentimes you can make some very strange choices that appear outward, but if you have to go back in and teach why you're point of view at that moment led you to those behaviors. And sometimes as a writer, it can be challenging to find the motivation that led you to do sometimes unpleasant or sort of harmful or silly things. You know what I mean? So you have to find that way of sharing why you did what you did. That's often the big question in the memoir. Why did you do it? You know you did it, but why? What drove you? What was the motivation? What were you looking for that you couldn't find?
Well, I agree, and I actually think that's true in fiction, too. I mean, certainly as a reader, there's been times where I've questioned, now, why would that character do that? And as a writer of fiction, I find that my writing group holds my feet to the fire and says, why did she do that? Is she, like, psychopathic? And I'm thinking, well, if she's psychopathic, that must mean I'm psychopathic, because I'm the one who decided she was going to do that. But whether it's fiction or memoir, or therapeutic writing, it's a question of constantly asking, why did somebody do this? What was their motivation? Whether it was conscious or subconscious. So it's pretty complex.
Yeah. Well, of course, in fiction, you run into the thing of where you, the author, thinks, I need this character to do X. And it's a very intellectual decision, kind of. And it goes against what the character would do. It goes against the flow of the story. And those decisions, to me, always stick out, are always harder, always feel forced, and usually a reading group can pick up on something like that with questions like, why did they do that?
That's true, although in real life, oftentimes we do something that's out of character for us, right? We do something silly, like you said, it doesn't make sense, but we do it, or we say stupid things, we let things blurt out of our mouths. So it does. So in some respects, I know what you mean, but in some respects, the fictional character who acts out of character is maybe even more believable and more interesting.
But you can't do it intellectually. So what I mean is
characters do
strange things that catch you by surprise that you wouldn't have predicted for them. But if it came from the authentic place, the inspired place, it fits for reasons that are mysterious. But when you try and stick it in there because you need them to go to the store or whatever it is, that's when you can get into trouble as a fiction writer. You know,
absolutely. Well, I agree with you.
We have a caller. I think I know who this must be. Mr. Pretty, is that you?
It is I, Mr. Kanawra. Another stellar and fascinating interview, my friend, as always.
Thank
I learn every time I listen.
Good.
Hi, Gail. Gail, I want to wish you my best wishes to you for unparalleled success with the damnable legacy of a minister's wife. What a great title, by the way.
Thank you.
My question is that I noticed you have a tab on your website that just says thanks. I thought that was wonderful, and that's where you list many fellow writers who have been supportive to you in your writing. So my question really is, how essential is that one-on-one interaction with other writers to you and your own writing craft? I know for me, and I know for Bill as well, it's vital.
Oh, yeah, a little one-on-one. How about that, Gail?
I'm sorry, Bill, I didn't hear what you said.
I said, how about that, Gail? One-on-one, how much has it meant to you?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for bringing up my thanks tab because I do need to update it and even put people like Mr. Knauer on it. So I do need to do that. But the one-on-one interaction among writers is absolutely critical because we are in this this camp for people who see the world sometimes slightly differently, and we need to be able to share our experiences, not just with writing, but sometimes with life. And for example, when I said I wrote a one-year memoir when I was in this one particular writing group, having that one-on-one interaction with them was so important in helping me process my thoughts as well as my words on the page.
Yeah. You know, I think it's so true. I host this thing actually, I'm doing it tomorrow night at East West Books, the Authors Roundtable. I do this once a month. So anybody in Seattle, you want to go down, you can. East West Books, 7 o'clock, I'll be there. April 8th, tomorrow. So, but the reason I do that in part is that I think writers, as creative people, are faced more directly with the unknowable uncertainty of life. That is, I think, a sort of ineluctable quality of life. It's there all the time, but writing and facing that blank page every day, we confront it more directly maybe than some people who do other kind of work. And I think that that causes a level of anxiety in us sometimes that maybe only another writer could really appreciate, or at least another artist. And I love talking to writers about that experience, regardless of their experience level. I don't know about you, but I find that always gratifying.
I do. And also, I think the concept that we, in a way, we're all kind of fighting a little bit of an uphill battle, not only trying to get our thoughts expressed in a way that readers will understand, but even just trying to get our work out there. So, and we're in the same boat as a lot of other artists, musicians, and whatnot. So trying to fight that battle to get out there and be heard and be seen is a big one. So we like to share. We like to wine together. We like to support one another, read each other's books, and help each other make network connections. And in fact, later this week, I'll be in Minneapolis with about 11,000 fellow writers at the AWP conference. I'm going, I'll be on a panel to talk about therapeutic writing. So I'll be rubbing elbows with all kinds of writers while I'm there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, if any of you 11,000 people who are going to the AWP in Minnesota, when is the conference again?
This week. It starts Thursday.
Oh, it does. Oh, God, I didn't realize
that. Or Wednesday
night,
actually. I'm doing a reading Wednesday night, so I guess tomorrow night it starts and it goes through till Saturday.
Oh, you'll be on a plane soon. Okay. Well, anyway, check her out. She's going to be doing a panel. That's awesome. That's awesome. Boy, that'll be a lot of fun. Everybody is anybody. Well, I won't be there, so I guess not everybody, but most everybody will be there. You know, another thing about the company of writers, it seems to me, is when writers start talking about the creative process, we have a habit, and I think it's unavoidable, of sounding, whether we want to or not, a bit mystical, because we start talking about our characters talking to us, and we start talking about things coming to us and receiving these things. And when you talk about inspiration, which is really what we're talking about, with people who don't live deliberately creative lives in that way, sometimes people can – I've found myself talking about the writing process with people who are maybe computer engineers or something, and I get looks that I don't get elsewhere. And sometimes I need the company of a writer just so they understand what that is about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that I could classify that as two kinds of looks. One is the eyes glaze over because it's just so far not in the realm of the person that you're speaking with, or the kind of the sideways look like, have you seen your shrink lately? Did you hear what you're talking about with all of your imaginary friends? So either way, it's a, you know, there's obviously a gap in the connection. Yes.
I know. But that doesn't matter because that is the process. It is receptive. You are listening to characters. You're not inventing them totally. That's the process. And there's no other way to talk about it, at least not that I know of.
And two, I think it's the whole process of the writing is I think that many writers, I like to think that I'm one of them, really study humans more than a lot of other people. And I say that because in my past life, when I was a CPA, it wasn't that I was a robot. I certainly interacted with people. But I don't know that I studied them quite to the degree that I do now.
Yeah. Well, on that note, this half hour has gone too quickly. I have one more question for you, Gail. What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
That's a really good one. If writing has taught me anything, I think it's taught me to be patient in looking for the truth.
Yeah. You have to be, because it's there. It just may take some time for you to see it.
Yes. Yeah. And you can define truth in about an infinite number of ways.
No kidding. All right. So if folks want to look you up and maybe take one of your classes or workshops or buy your books, what is it? Just Gail, what is the website?
The website is www.gekretschmer.com. And on Twitter, I'm
gekretschmer.com.
G.E. Kretschmer.
Excellent.
And on Twitter, I'm at G.E. Kretschmer.
Excellent. Okay.
And I have an author Facebook page, too, that's probably G. Elizabeth Kretschmer.
Excellent. Well, Gail, it has been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take it easy. Patience, people. Patience in looking for the truth. It's true. It's there. It's the truth. It has to be there. It's the truth. But sometimes it takes us a little while to see it. Just because it takes a little while does not mean it's not there or that you won't see it. You will. But you have to have patience. You have to have patience in your search. Okay. I don't know who my guest is going to be next week. I've got my fingers crossed for a very special guest, but he may or may not be able to make it. So we'll just have to wait and see. So until then, I want you just to tune into love, you know, tune into love and follow it. It's the organizing principle of the universe. It's the organizing principle of every poem and story ever written. So tune into it, follow it, and it'll take you where you want to go.